But first, it's time for our Waltz with Shapiro, our Shapiroette. And Bruce, there's so much to discuss.
Well, indeed, and particularly this sense over just the last week that with every day you could feel the political terrain shifting and the walls, in a sense, closing in on the Trump administration, if not in a definitive way, at least in a fundamental way. I mean, first you had the shutdown, and for all his rhetoric, President Trump folding like cheap lawn furniture in the face of
President Pelosi. She's doing a very good job.
Well, indeed, in the face of her own fierce clarity and the discipline she brought to the Democratic caucus, which remained thoroughly united. And this, you can't underestimate what this means going forward. Then, even as we're sort of catching our breath from that, you have the indictment of Roger Stone, not exactly a surprise, and yet enormously consequential, one of President Trump's closest advisors, going back to his first fantasies about running for president, and a significant historical figure in the Republican Party. This is a big deal. And while Stone has not, it should be said, been indicted for anything directly involving Russia, instead he's been indicted for perjury confessed in his own emails and texts, there is a sense that the Mueller investigation is quickening and approaching some kind of climax. So we're in the middle of a ground-changing time.
President Pelosi has, as we've discussed previously, not been hot to trot on impeachment, but she said a few slightly ambiguous things about it more recently.
Well, look, I think what Pelosi and a lot of other senior Democrats are doing is trying to not get out ahead of the legal investigation, right? You can't, when you've got someone as disciplined as Mueller on the case and a Justice Department that continues, it seems, to take hands off, I think Pelosi and a lot of Democrats understand that to rush forward with impeachment ahead of whatever facts emerge here, A, might not wash politically, might not make the best case, but B, could actually interfere with a criminal investigation. I mean, look just at Michael Cohen, the president's former lawyer, who said he was going to testify before Congress in open session, then said he wouldn't because he's too afraid of the president and Rudolph Giuliani, then now says he will, he's been subpoenaed and will testify behind closed doors to the Intelligence Committee, will probably end up being subpoenaed. This is going to go back and forth for a while. And of course, on top of which, with these characters like Cohen and Roger Stone, they all lie so much all the time that it's almost hard to know what counts as what's going to count from as truthful testimony from these guys. Look, what is in Pelosi's interest? What's in Pelosi's interest is keeping her caucus together on issues like immigration and taxation, and keeping her own committees empowered to do their own investigation. And I think, impeachment is a likely end to this whole saga, the Democrats in Congress see no need to get out ahead of their own skis on this one.
Let's look at another president, and that's the chap, or there's almost two presidents there as well, in Venezuela.
Well, look, this is from a United States perspective, this again is an enormously consequential moment. And let's make no mistake, President Maduro of Venezuela is an authoritarian and a repressive thug who has led his country to disaster. There is a massive refugee crisis on the borders with Brazil and Colombia. It's a spectacular mess, and an enormously courageous citizen activists who are putting themselves on the line. That said, the direct intervention of the Trump administration and National Security Advisor John Bolton, who never met an intervention he didn't like, this marks a return to the days when the U.S. treated Latin America as its backyard. Now, to be fair, President Trump didn't invent this. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State under President Obama, she too weighed in on the politics of Honduras, which also in crisis, and there was some not so great American intervention. But the idea that the U.S., even with important allies like Canada and so on, that the U.S. is going to directly demand a change in Latin American countries' politics, and even threaten, as Bolton seems to be doing in some scrawled notes, the use of American troops. This is a return to big stick diplomacy in the Americas, which had largely been abandoned decades ago.
Well, let's go from that political vortex to the polar vortex.
Yes, well, you know, climate change is never far from our minds, even when President Trump does his best to distract us. And the big story in the U.S. over the next couple of weeks is going to be an extraordinary blast of cold air, a natural disaster sweeping down from the Arctic. The predictions now are for Chicago, a city that where I used to live, that they're accustomed to cold in, getting cold to the level of, let me pull out my little converter, minus 30 Celsius, minus 23 Fahrenheit is minus 30 Celsius. It is dangerous, deadly cold that is sweeping down over the Midwest now and is the winter version of the hurricanes and wildfires and the other extreme weather that seems to be marking an enduring change in the American landscape. This too will challenge the federal government to respond, I think. It's something to keep an eye on, because it does, while it's not as fun as watching Trump put his foot in his mouth, and not as exciting as waiting for the next indictment, in fact, speaks to really the long-term challenges that the country faces, regardless of the legal fate of the president.
Bruce, let's circle back to where we started, to the shutdown, if you don't mind. The shutdown has been, well, it's suspended rather than ended, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and the, you know, the president and Congress agreed to a 3-week period. Essentially, this is breathing room to let everybody calm down and let the president, I think, find a way to save face, because there is no way he is going to get his wall through Congress, even though he spent the better part of his 20 minutes on air announcing the agreement, defending it using totally fraudulent numbers and figures, as is his wont. The basic dynamic is not going to change. The president is threatening to use executive action to declare a state of emergency at the border, but that invites an immediate legal challenge. The president is not getting his wall anytime soon, and I think that what happened is that Republicans in the Senate finally revolted against the president and against their own leader, and they do see their own political future in jeopardy. Now, this, we still don't really know where this is going. My guess is that the president's withdrawal is going to continue, that there simply is no path forward for his wall, And while he may find a way to declare victory and withdraw, that's where we're headed. Still, the reality is that in 3 weeks after the State of the Union on February 5th, in the middle of February, we could end up back where we were. And this is having a pretty devastating impact on, you know, almost a million federal workers and outward into the broader economy. It's also a reminder of the weakness of the American labor movement. In the end, one of the things that finally ended the shutdown was the sort of what was essentially wildcat striking by air traffic controllers at LaGuardia Airport and throughout the Northeast. Air traffic controllers were once upon a time unionized, and that union was broken by Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s, one of the first heralds of the new political climate of that era. For the shutdown to continue, that weakness of labor is what the Republicans count on. I don't think anyone wants to go back there, though. And in fact, there's talk in Congress of passing legislation to prevent shutdowns, to outlaw shutdowns, and instead to automatically go to continuing budgets when matters are up in the air like this.
We will be discussing the postponed State of the Union. Can hardly wait for that. The voice of Bruce Shapiro, columnist with The Nation and exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.